Blog Talk Radio.
This is Deanna, and excuse me, welcome to the Spingola Zone. It is Monday, May 5th, 2014. This is Deanna Spingola. This weekly radio program is sponsored by the American Free Press, whose website is AmericanFreePress.net. I have been a subscriber to the American Free Press and highly recommend a subscription to that newspaper. I also wish to commend the wonderful historical journal, The Barnes Review, whose website is barnesreview.org, and Barnes is spelled B-A-R-N-E-S, barnesreview.org. Please visit both websites, support the efforts of the people who report accurate history and contemporary events. My websites are spingola.com and spingolaspeaks.info, which was created by one of my listeners. We will be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com. I invite you all to go there. It's a terrific little hangout for people who want to listen and ask questions. Our guest today is Mark Wachler. His website is whiteoutpress.com, and I just recently discovered his website and was fascinated by some of the articles that he has done. So welcome to the program, Mark. I still hear some music there in the background. I better just get rid of it. We don't want background music. Okay, I'm doing my own logistics this morning, so I'm not real great at this. I usually have a producer. Anyway, Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Deanna. I appreciate you having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, well, you have some fascinating articles, just really fascinating.
Thank you.
Let me just click that. Yes, very fascinating articles.
And we tried just to preface everything, it's Whiteout Press, the name of it, the whole thing. We figured we've been trying to, everything that regular news media blacks out and covers up and censors, we figured that's going to be our niche. That's what we're, you know, people are desperate to read about. So that's the kind of stuff we try to cover. If, you know, we pride ourselves by saying we're not left-wing or right-wing or conservative or liberal. The news should be independent. It should be the news. So
sure.
We just, you know, if something's blacked out, we don't really care what it is. We grab it, run with it, and try to research it a little bit. You know, our readers typically appreciate it. You know, we try to quote government officials, government reports, you know, university studies, you know, established people and, you know, communities and things. So we try not to just run with, you know, the wild, fun stuff as much as I would like to, but we do try to stick with, you know, the stuff that's being blacked out, and then, like I said, we just try to research the heck out of it.
All righty. So how long have you had this website?
Well, Whiteout Press, we started a little bit over 3 years ago, just to kind of, and, you know, to tell you the truth, I try to make it look like it's this big, reputable, you know, news outlet, but to be honest with you, I'm a one-man operation here, and I'm wearing many hats and kind of flying by the seat of my pants here. So I started it 3 years ago, and before that I was actually a journalist for Examiner.com, and they, you know, I always wanted to write articles, and I've actually been publishing little homemade newsletters, grassroots kind of things since I was 17 years old. So, you know, I started with the literal cut and paste and black and white copy machines and sending them out via the mail with postage stamps, and here I am 25 years later on the internet with a website. And so it seems like it's just been an evolving effort, but it's really just me trying to, you know, get the news out there that to me seems obvious. I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm the only one that's frustrated. And, you know, there's so many things to report on. I don't even know where to start sometimes.
Sure.
You know, so.
Well, the one thing I noticed about your website is that you do not have a whole bunch of advertisers.
No, in fact, we rely pretty much 100% on our subscribers and readers to just, you know, their occasional $10 and $20 donations. And in fact, we just had our one-year fundraiser. We don't even ask for donations that much because I know our readers don't really like that. And we don't rent out addresses. We protect everybody's information. We're just, you know, I'm a regular person just like everybody else. So
Okay.
But once a year, and our average donation, I think we got 20 donations this time around, and the average was $14. So, I mean, that'll give you an idea that it really is just regular old people. We're not funded by anybody or anything. So.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. One of your recent articles, and you've got several that I would like you to talk to us about, but the one that that was published on April 30th, 2014, why do 546 people own 52% of the entire Western United States? That is a good question.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's kind of why I stated it in the form of a question. I mean, that was the title of our article. I was shocked. My mouth hit the floor when I saw that. I mean, I always knew that the federal government owned a lot of land, especially out west, and I pictured immediately, like, you know, nuclear missile silos and radiated land from testing sites, but I never imagined for the life of me that, I mean, what was it? Nevada's the most federally owned state, and depending on who you ask, it's between 81% and 87% of the entire state of Nevada is owned by the federal government.
Exactly. And you have a map here, and it is marked in, and in red, what they own. I mean, they own most of Nevada. They have a lot of land in New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, Idaho.
Yeah, Utah was number two on the list. They were the second most owned at 66% of the state of Utah.
So. Holy cow. So then that gives us an indication of how they were able to conduct all of those horrific tests in those two states, which killed a lot of people, a lot of animals, farm animals. And you wonder, well, how could they get away with that?
Right. And it's not like we made the map up. I mean, it's right straight from the U.S. Bureau of Land Management.
Sure. And then also when you consider that what the big facility that they just opened up in Utah, that I think the NSA opened it up as their headquarters. Excuse me, one of their headquarters, so that they can spy on the rest of us. And I thought when they opened that up, I thought, well, why would people in Utah allow that? And then we see, well, it's because the U.S. government owns most of Utah.
Right.
So. And you're talking 546 people. Now, do they own it? You know, they don't have a title, but obviously they control the land. If you so control.
Right. I mean, that was just my. I probably went two steps backwards with that one, saying, "Well, who is the federal government?" And the federal government is really nothing more than a sheet of paper called the U.S. Constitution. So, but that you know specifically names. You know, the three levels of government, 550 or 546 specific individuals, you know, between the president, the vice president, Congress, and the Supreme Court. You know, the other 10 million employees are just employees of the executive branch for the most part.
Sure. And the president is the CEO of the corporation.
Right, yeah.
So anyway.
So, yeah, they don't technically own the land. The government owns the land, but they are the 546 people that administer it, and as we've seen, like in Harry Reid's case, they are profiting handsomely from it.
Yes, and of course, this is also in conjunction with what has occurred lately with the Bundy family.
Right.
So do you want to speak to that a little bit?
You're going to get me in trouble again, aren't you, Deanna? No. That was one that kind of made me, you know, a lot of times I get stuck in the middle, and I don't want to say specifically because I'm trying to remain impartial. I've been an independent for the last 20 years, so it's like sometimes I see that both sides are wrong. You know, the left wing calls me a right winger, and the right wing calls me a left winger, and this Clive and Bundy instance is just one more example of it, because, I mean, while, you know, it seems like the story, if you want to just stick with the facts, and, you know, if we're an American citizen and we believe in law and order, then I guess Clive and Bundy is on the wrong side of the law. So, you know, we wrote it one article, because it just happened to fall on Patriots Day, and I thought, gee, what a coincidence. You know, American citizens rising up against the government and hundreds of people end up dying. So, you know, it happened after Waco and you know, it happened after the Lexington Green. So there's, you know, plenty of examples. So we kind of correlated that article on that day with the Clive and Bundy situation.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think we closed the conclusion of the article, you know, with saying, you know, there's good reasons. Is this necessarily a good reason to launch a civil war? That's what it would end up being if, you know, not so much maybe because Clive and Bundy got murdered and killed just like, you know, they did at Ruby Ridge with the Weaver family or, you know, any of the ones in Waco. I mean, you know, that might not do it. But if there's 200 volunteer militiamen standing there doing nothing but keep trying to be defensive and they get slaughtered, I'm pretty sure there's going to be another 10,000 volunteer militiamen from around the country that are going to take up arms tomorrow, you know, within an hour. So
sure.
I just kind of, was the gist of the article was, please, everybody, take a step back. You know, there's, you know, history shows there are, I guess, legitimate reasons to kind of go to war with your own government, but I don't think this is an example of one of them, you know?
Sure. Well, Harry Reid has been a scoundrel for a long time in Nevada. My father had kind of a run-in with him. My father lived in Nevada and basically said that that Reid is really a scum. I mean, he's just out there for himself.
Yeah, I normally don't name names trying to, you know, keep from getting in serious trouble with the government, but I've been learning more and more about Harry Reid every month, it seems like. And, yeah, I am in awe at this man's just blatant disregard for the ethics, the rules, the laws. It's mind-boggling.
Well, I think the whole Congress is, you could apply that to the whole Congress.
Oh, definitely. In fact, we've got a four-part series of four articles we called Naming Names. And one of them gets all of the congressmen guilty of insider trading. I think there was something like 40 of them we named by name. And, of course, they were led by Dennis Hastert and Nancy Pelosi and, you know, well, it was, you know, a few years ago. But, so, I mean, there was literally 40 of them that were profiting with millions of dollars personally.
Well, of course, they know when the wars are going to be, and that's so they're going to go and put their money in the armaments companies that are going to be making a lot of profit. So they're all guilty of insider trading.
And everybody on the banking committee just happened to coincidentally buy and sell banking shares while the economy was collapsing and we were doing bailouts.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, the stock market is swinging by 10% here and there on trading days, and it's all based on is Congress going to bail them out or not. And here the 22 congressmen and women who are going to decide that are all invested in the stock market. And right then, not just for 20 years. They were buying and selling stocks while they were meeting.
Yes.
But like they said, it's not against the law. So what are you going to do? You know.
Amazing. Of course, they make the law.
I know.
And they also break the law. And it's okay for them to lie to us, but the regular citizens are not allowed to lie to the government.
And here, Deanna, just to give you one, because I know readers and listeners love statistics and facts, here's one mind-blowing statistic about Congress and their insider trading. When Dennis Hastert from my own Illinois took the speakership, he had a net worth of $220,000. When he retired 8 years later, after being speaker for 8 years, his $220,000 net worth jumped to $11 million. And he did nothing more than be the Speaker of the House.
Wow.
That's how much they're profiting.
Now, I live in the suburbs of Chicago, so we are actually neighbors.
So we're neighbors, yes. Yeah, wonderful.
Yes, we are.
So we have a special understanding of government corruption then, being
that. Yes. Indeed. Absolutely. Well, as far as the Bundy situation, but it's my understanding that Harry Reid had some sort of a deal with the Chinese that they wanted to come in and build something on the land that Mr. Bundy was using. And the other thing that really ticked me off about this whole situation is that if the Bundy family had been using this land to graze, and I mean, seriously, is there anything wrong with that? Logistically, is there anything wrong with allowing your cows to graze on land that nobody's using?
That's where I ran into some what I thought was credible, legitimate anti-Bundy, you know, rhetoric, and we put that in the article because I couldn't, you know, refute it. And you know, some of the people like right here in Chicago were saying, "So what does that mean? Everybody in America gets to use public land, so every cattle rancher in America is going to flood a tiny piece of land that can't accommodate it? You know, or am I going to march my cattle down State Street in downtown Chicago because it's public land?" I mean,
well,
you know, what's good for one cattle rancher is good for all the cattle ranchers.
But if you look at the government, the government abuse of ranchers in the last 10 years, you'll find that their biggest objective is to get rid of all the cattle ranchers. And we're talking about the ones in Colorado and of course, the ones in Nevada, because they really want to have exclusively factory farms. And so this is, if you look at Colorado in 2005-2006, then you recognize what they're doing. That if they had objections to this 10 years ago or 20 years ago, they should have said so at the time. But I think it was incredibly wrong of the U.S. government to seize cattle, to seize calves. I'm an animal lover. And not let them have access to water. I mean, I saw some of the bodies. And in Colorado, they actually, what I think they did using HARP is that they actually created so much havoc that there were 10,000 head of cattle that froze to death. I mean, it was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
No, that is.
They did. So, anyway, but moving on, this Harry Reid did want to apparently rent some of this land out to the Chinese.
Yeah, I came across that from various sources, and to be honest with you, I didn't want to get two stories away from the original story I was working on, so I took note of that, and I believe I even mentioned something about it in the article, but I didn't actually try to verify it. But yeah, we did see that from a number of sources, and according to what everybody was saying out there, it's this federal land that the Chinese want to come in and build the solar factory on, and it just so happens that the U.S. agent, because foreign companies, if they want to operate in the U.S., have to appoint a U.S. agent to be, you know, legally viable and responsible and represent them in America, just to be Harry Reid's son. I know, which didn't surprise me, but like I said, I didn't get to verify it or anything. But and I don't believe the factory's ever been built. They're literally just trying to make this deal happen so that this Chinese solar factory gets all this free land, literally free land, to build their facilities on. And it just so happens that the guy making it happen is Harry Reid's son, representing the Chinese company.
And so it's okay for some foreigner to come in and use public land, but Bundy can't let his cattle graze.
Right. And of course, those poor little animals that they blame for Bundy not being able to go there. It's okay to construct a... Oh, that was the other thing they pointed out. In order to satisfy the deal, some federal officials or somebody did like a land survey and officially ruled that in those few acres or those 20 acres they're going to build on, they did not find a single one of those protected animals that for some magical reason
takes
it all over there, but not in those designated, you know, however many acres. So,
wow.
So it was clear, good for the environmentalists, you know, they can, and I'm thinking, how corrupt can this be?
It's, sure.
You know, I suppose it's possible all this stuff is legitimate, but I, you know, it's what? I doubt it highly, you know?
Sure. And the other thing about the Bundys is they're not growing all these cows for their freezer, okay? They are supplying, they are a supplier. I mean, they don't just, this isn't just some small farm. This is a rancher who helps those of us who buy beef from ranchers, you know, via the supermarket or whatever.
You know, and personally, I have absolutely no problem with, you know, I wish it wasn't federal land to begin with.
It shouldn't be federal land to begin with.
I mean, if they want to own the toxic nuclear waste dumps, then that's fine, you know, clean those up, that's what tax dollars are for, I guess. But yeah, you don't need to own 52% of the Western United States.
Exactly. And if it is public land, Bundy is a citizen, and if they haven't had a problem up to this point, then all of a sudden, why do they have a problem? And to go in with agents with guns, I mean, couldn't they sat down at the negotiation table and talked about this? It just seemed like they set this up to be a crisis.
Well, you know, and if you ask me, I know, you know, I don't want to seem, you know, like I'm stereotyping anybody, but from what I saw of the Cliven Bundy fans, they've probably never met like an Occupy Wall Street protester in their life, but I can guarantee you for the last 3 years, those Occupy Wall Street protesters have been facing the same thing. All those long-haired hippie kids, they're getting beaten, they're getting maced, they're getting tasered. It, for no reason. I mean, I've seen the video. That's what launched, it seems like, the whole thing nationwide, when that girl in New York on international TV was just getting maced nonstop at point-blank range, you know, screaming in pain. And within 3 days, there were Occupy protests in every city in America.
Sure.
And, you know, and then it happened in Seattle. And it happened, you know, it just, it happened. And then what did we find out? We find out that there's a national security contractor that proposed to the FBI that they literally assassinate Occupy, I believe it was either, I think it was Occupy Houston or one of the Texas cities. They were literally put together a program to assassinate the Occupy Houston leaders before it even started, just to squelch the thing. And, you know, that was a conspiracy theory for about a year until some, you know, some freedom of, it was, maybe it was Snowden, I don't know, somebody got their hands on the actual documents, and now, oh my God, it's legitimate. So it's like there's a whole lot of people that are that didn't like me. That didn't surprise me one bit. That's why I wrote that kind of panic-stricken article that day saying, you know, everybody take a step back because this is going to happen. You know, this isn't some romantic fantasy. These are Americans that are going to kill each other, and my fear is what's going to happen tomorrow, you know? And, you know, like I said, there's a lot of things worth fighting for, but I don't know, you know, sometimes you just got to cool off for a second.
Sure.
I'm no fan of the federal government taking over everybody's lands and, you know, things like that. And
sure. Well, the federal government has done a lot of very questionable, really questionable things. One of the articles that you have right next to this article about the 546 people who own 52% or control 52% of the entire Western U.S., you have an article that says Secret Government Experiments on the American People. And if people click on that, then you have kind of a little timeline here that... and you start back in 1931, and, you know, just about everything that one could read about experiments on the U.S. citizens has the word Rockefeller associated with it. I mean, that's...
Oh, I know it. I know it. It's like, yeah, when you're, you know, paying millions of dollars to fund experimental research and stuff, you tend to get some funky experiments going on. And
sure.
And to be honest with you, this is one of our original articles, and it's in our timeless section.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things left over from when I started, you know, doing this kind of grassroots activism back in 1987 when I was 17 years old. So I came across this thing in the early 90s, and I've just been hanging on to it ever since. And, I republished it, but then I figured I'd just start adding to it. Because it really does seem like every year, they come out and admit that 30 years ago they were doing another evil secret experiment on U.S., you know, jail prisoners or U.S., you know, military personnel or poor unsuspecting poor countries in Africa or, you know, or prisoners of war from Vietnam. I mean, you name it. They've been experimenting, and it's not just the government either. It's half the time it's crazy government people, but then most of the time it seems like it's corporations that are just getting a free pass to do it.
Sure. Well, even if you go back to 1897, when the U.S. Military invaded the Philippines, they had a lot of smallpox vaccine, and the Filipinos were a virgin population, didn't have any smallpox. They lived very, very comfortably, naturally, very almost disease-free. And so the U.S. military goes in there, and they decide that they are going to compel everybody to be vaccinated.
Right.
Otherwise, they would the corporation that created the smallpox vaccine would have to use up this old, some of it was old, they would have to use it up on old people in the homes and guinea pig populations. People who have no control over their own lives, people in the prisons and children in the they didn't have a foster care system at that point the way that we know it now, but they did have young people incarcerated, and they would have had to use that smallpox vaccine on them. So they just took this the Filipino population, and most of the people that they vaccinated were in the cities, and those that that could escape went out into the jungles. And before you knew it, they had a huge epidemic, and thousands upon thousands of people died.
Right. No, I remember. Every now and then I'll see a nice documentary about it, you know.
Yeah. Pretty awful.
Yeah. In fact, I like those independent little documentaries. You can learn some fascinating things.
Sure.
Because, you know, the TV set, God forbid, I can't stand what the TV set pumps out these days. You know, actually, thank God for the corporate media, because that's actually what's made Whiteout Press so popular and successful. So.
Sure. Sure. Now, people can subscribe.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, it's free. We do a daily article, at least one a day, and then we do like a weekly email blast where we send out the entire week's worth of, you know, articles, just a teaser and the headline, so you can link to whichever one you like. But it's definitely free, always free, always has been, always will be, and you can unsubscribe at any time. And if you want to do that, just go on to, I think, pretty much any Whiteout Press page, from the home page to an article page. At the bottom, at the end of the article, or at the upper right-hand corner, there's a subscribe box, and just enter in your email address, and it's as simple as that.
Right. Right. Yeah, I just, I ran across you. I don't know when what drew me to your website, but I thought, wow, there are some very interesting things here, and...
No, I think, and actually, you know, we don't advertise. Like I said, we're on a shoestring. I'm a one-man. Actually, I'm a single parent raising two kids and paying child support for them. So it's hard for me. So I've never paid one penny for advertising. All of our phenomenal success over the last 3 years has literally been word of mouth. It's from, you know, people who really appreciated the articles. And, you know, looking back, I kind of noticed it seems like all of our articles, for the most part, come in the form of two different categories. And one is when frantic people who have been victimized, that, you know, the voiceless little people in this world write me a heartbreaking letter saying, can you please write about this and help us, you know, shine some light on it. You know, I jump on those. I'll help anybody that's in need of help, sincerely, any, you know what I mean? Because
sure.
We get some crazy, you know, requests, but you can always tell the legitimate ones, you know, like,
sure.
Like America's one and only POW. You know that? You'd be astonished how many Americans don't even realize that we have one prisoner of war right now, one official prisoner of war from Iraq and Afghanistan. His name is Bo Bergdahl. He's from Idaho. And he's been a prisoner of war for 5 years, and we're in the process of leaving him behind, you know, but nobody knows about it. It's you know, that's the kind of stuff that just blows my mind. And, you know, I jumped on that. I think we've written a dozen articles about Bo, you know, just because, you know, I'm a parent. I've got two, you know, little girls. I would be tormented every second of every day if I was that boy's parent, you know?
Sure.
And there's one. How hard we can give $2 billion in aid to Pakistan last year, but God forbid we attach a condition that Pakistan get our kid back, you know, because that's where he's at, apparently, according to the intelligence. So,
wow.
And then there's another story that, you know, comes to mind. There's a 65-year-old grandpa who's been in jail for 30 years for a simple marijuana possession charge because of a 3-strike mandatory sentencing 30 years ago. I mean, this guy is harmless. And, you know, so there was a change.org petition going around. So I jumped on that. I wrote about that one, too. You know, we're letting rapists and murderers out, you know, after a couple of years, but we got this 65-year-old pot-smoking grandpa in jail for 30 years. Come on, you know?
Oh, that is terrible. I think Robert Clatshorn, I had him on my program, and he talks about these people. I mean, nonviolent, just people
right.
Who are smoking pot, who get thrown in jail. And yet we have rapists and pedophiles running all over.
Right, and it's usually always because of the mandatory 3 strikes or a mandatory drug, you know, mandatory sentence. And half the time you got the judge giving the sentence and apologizing up and down right there in court testimony. And it's just heartbreaking. You know, why does everybody say this is wrong, but yet it keeps happening and nobody's fixing it?
It's, sure.
You know, and then the other half, like I said, that's half of our article coming to the aid of people that just have no voice and need some help, and we'll try to, you know, we don't have the biggest circulation in the world, but it grows a little every day, and we
sure.
Do understand. But the other half is trying to expose the corruption, the crazy stuff that's blacked out on TV, and that's the part that gets a little hairy when you start talking about powerful people doing wrongdoing, and, you know, I get nervous about those, but I don't have, like I said, I've been doing this since I was 17 years old, so I've actually had the FBI come to my house once.
Oh, tell us about that. Why did they do that?
Well, as it turned out, that, and keep in mind, I'm from Chicago, lifelong resident. I've never been west of the Mississippi River in my entire life. And for some reason, out in Oregon or Montana or something, there were a couple of courthouses or government buildings that got, like, firebombed, you know, by, like, it sounded like amateur kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But when they finally caught the kids that did it, they raided their houses, and they found a couple of my articles there. And they wanted to see if I was some kind of, instigator, or what the heck, how did I fit into it all? So I told them, no, it's the same thing I do now, except, you know, I had a couple thousand, you know, subscribers then, and I said, I don't know what my subscribers are doing, you know, but I welcomed them in. In fact, I had a newborn baby in one arm and a one-year-old running around. I remember that day specifically. I invited them in, offered them coffee, you know, and we sat down, talked. They let me, I changed diapers. It was crazy, but I had nothing to hide. I still don't have anything to hide. I report the news, you know, and I try to do it as honestly and sincerely as possible, and if I touch on things other people are afraid to, you know, write about or, you know, purposely blacking out, you know, I'll write about it. You know, whatever happens, happens. I'm not doing anything wrong.
That's amazing that the FBI visited you just because these people had some of your articles.
Yeah, just, you know, 2,000 miles away.
Wow.
And like I told them, I got nothing to hide. I cover everything from Gulf War syndrome to, you know, government to corruption to libertarians and greens. I cover,
sure.
You know, I was doing the same thing that I am now. The things that are getting blacked out, covered up, I help them out. All the independent candidates that can't seem to get, you know, any news coverage, I'm their first one that writes articles about them just to help them.
Wow. All righty. Another thing that you've covered is the Supreme Court rules drug companies exempt from lawsuits.
Right. That is actually, if I'm not mistaken, that's our most popular article of all time.
Okay, let's talk about that.
It is, that's right. So it's from July of 2013. And if I remember this case right, it went all the way to the Supreme Court. There was a woman who had a side effect that just horribly disfigured her, caused her all kinds of pain. I mean, it was really, really a sad, tragic incident from a side effect from the drug. And I believe it turned out to be that it was, and yeah, it did. It turned out to be that it was a faulty thing about the way it was being manufactured, that it had always been manufactured. There were a lot of victims. And she sued the drug company. But because it was a generic drug company, and this is what the Supreme Court decided, the Supreme Court ruled that all generic drug companies in America, which account for 80% of all the drugs consumed in America, they are exempt from lawsuits for all of that stuff because they're required. And here's the reasoning they said, which, I mean, part of me kind of understands because you're in a predicament there, but in reality, you know, no, they were in the wrong. But the Supreme Court ruled that generic drug companies are required by law to reproduce the original name brand, ingredients, manufacturing practices, warning labels, and I mean down to the exact wording on the label. So the Supreme Court ruled that she needed to sue the brand name manufacturer because the generic drug company, they were just forced. They're forced to copy their stuff exactly. So, you know, technically, I mean, that's kind of, you know what I mean? It's like,
sure.
I understand that. But then she wanted to sue the brand name manufacturer. And guess what she found out? That once the Food and Drug Administration officially rules your product in that formula, that manufacturing, whatever, and that labeling is safe, it doesn't matter how many side effects or people die or anything. You cannot sue them. The
right.
Food and Drug Administration ruled, and they said it was safe, and that's what the law in the courts will respect. So this poor woman was just out of luck. And
it's also that you can't sue in a state court, right?
Right. I mean, that was the other thing they ruled, that because she did win. I mean, that's why it went to the United States Supreme Court.
Sure. And then they appealed it.
I'm sorry?
They appealed it to the Supreme Court.
Right, because she won in her own state, and it went up there, and they said, no, the federal government takes precedent over all states, you know, when it comes to pharmaceutical drugs and stuff. So it was New Hampshire. She sued Mutual Pharma in New Hampshire in state court and won, and she was awarded $21 million for her pain and suffering. But then the FDA, and then that's when, after she won, check this out, the FDA forced the pharmaceutical company and the original one, which just happened to be Merck, to change their labeling, change the warnings, because the victim was right. You know what I mean? They forced her to change everything. But she still got it got overturned by the United States Supreme Court because the FDA has authority and they deemed it safe.
Right. And the thing that your first paragraph, it says, and this is what caught me, you said, in case readers missed it, with all the coverage of the Trayvon Martin murder trial, I thought that that whole thing, I mean, it's like the O.J. Simpson trial. For 2 weeks, everybody, people would watch it on TV. That's all you heard about. That's all that we were given. And you brought that home to me.
I'm glad you point that out, because looking back, July 2013, I'm almost thinking, why in the world did I point out Trayvon Martin? But you're right. Back in July of 2013, we were saturated every second of the day on every channel. That's all we were doing.
Well, that's when they arrived at they acquitted him. And there was all, you know, some people were glad, some people were outraged. And meanwhile, and this is something that applies to everybody because so many people take drugs for various reasons. So while we're all distracted with Trayvon Martin, which really, okay, does that affect you or me? Or no, not really. It affects those two families. But this Supreme Court ruling affects everybody in America that takes any kind of drug.
Right, like probably 96% of the American population in effect. You know?
Exactly. And so while the media has us all distracted, the Supreme Court, literally behind closed doors and behind the curtain, so to speak, is doing something that affects 97% of us. And so this past week, with all this nonsense about the Clippers owner, Sterling, can't think of his first name, I mean, all
that's
you heard.
Fine. I haven't given that one more than 10 seconds of thought either, because you're absolutely right. I don't want to be distracted by something pointless as that.
So the whole time that this was going on, I was thinking, okay, I wonder what's really going on. What are they distracting us from? What are they really doing? Because it is the media. It is the media that tells us what to think about for however many days they spend on a particular issue.
Right.
And so everybody's talking about Trayvon Martin or talking about, or somebody, you know.
Look at CNN with the missing jetliner. That's been going on for nonstop coverage on CNN for what, over a month now? They're making jokes about it on Comedy Central now. That's how bad it's getting.
Yes. I mean, it's important. It's important, particularly for the people who have family members and friends on that airplane.
Sure. And actually, I have my own theory. I couldn't hold it back. I had to publish an article about it way back. I think it was on like day four. I put it out there, and I haven't had a single person agree with me yet. So maybe I'm a little off base. But if you want to touch on that one, I'd love to share that one with you.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I was thinking right at that particular time, because I get, you know, maybe 200 emails a day from just people suggesting topics, or I get, you know, a couple of different little news services. Like, my favorite one is Citizens for Legitimate Government. If you're, like, for your site, if you're ever looking for news, it's literally like a news service.
Oh, right. I get that every day. Huh?
And they get all those great headlines that you never see anywhere else. But anyway, so I'm seeing all these things, and I'm kind of stepping back looking at the big picture. And over the course of 48 hours, Russia sent something like 50,000 troops to the Ukrainian border. They broke out some heavy, heavy equipment that they've never used since, you know, ever, because that's how brand new it is. And unlike the United States, which has been at perpetual war for 30 years, we know exactly what our stuff does, so we don't have to test it out. Russia finally had the opportunity to test out all of this stuff. So, and I know for a fact they were, you know, for the first time, they were experimenting with massive movements of tens of thousands of soldiers, you know, in disciplined ways. I mean, they haven't had a chance to do that. And then I heard the story about how, you know, Russia brought down an American unmanned drone. And granted, it was some older model, and it was, you know, probably easy to hack. But they brought it down and landed it in Russia. And I thought, wow, not only are they experimenting with their tanks and their, you know, long, medium-range missiles and, you know, 80,000-man brigades and corps and things like that, but they're experimenting with their cyber warfare technology, too. They're literally breaking out everything they've been working on for 20 years, and now they got to test it because they're afraid they're going to need to use it over Ukraine. So Then this thought to me, well, gee, what else happened in the last 48 hours? This missing jetliner. And if you look at, you know, I was kind of thinking the switches were getting flipped, but they didn't picture the pilots doing it because it was in the body of the plane. They were saying it almost seemed like somebody was remotely flipping the switches off. And I thought, gee, just like the unmanned drone.
Sure.
You know, you're remotely taking. And then he kept saying it was almost like somebody took control of it. And then when I heard that the plane went a little bit higher than its safety capability, it went so high up in the air that it was beyond, you know, where it safely can fly.
Sure.
And then it dove straight down at some, you know, death-defying, you know, pace. I thought, that sounds like somebody controlling an aircraft with a remote control from 10,000 miles away for the first time. They're jerking this plane. If they were a pilot sitting in the seat, they wouldn't be doing it because they'd be feeling the movements themselves physically. But if you're in a room 10,000 miles away, you can make a plane do that like it's nothing.
Sure.
And then I thought, and then they're talking about how it's flying specifically known flight patterns. It's avoiding certain certain radar spaces. And I'm thinking, my God, that sounds like a very organized, you know, army, almost like the organized army that just appeared in eastern Ukraine with 10,000 unmarked, very disciplined soldiers. You know what I mean? So I'm thinking, that's four gigantic experimental, you know, warfare technologies that Russia just unleashed. There are at least three of them by Russia knowingly. Is it that far out of the question to think maybe the missing airliner was Russia's fourth, you know, tactic? You know, taking over, you know, remote cyber hacking airliners and planes and, you know, so that was our theory. You know, four things in 48 hours, all of them done by the Russians who are, you know, frantically preparing for war, possibly. So, I mean, that was our theory. I thought it was better than suicidal pilots and hijackings and landing in secret U.S. air bases to be flown into America later. And I mean, it just seemed, nothing seemed to add up.
Sure.
You know, our theory, you know, my theory so far hasn't been shot down. So I just thought I'd mention it, seeing as, you know, getting out there now.
Sure. All righty. Let's see. You have the 50 corporations that rule the world. Let's talk about that one.
Right. Like, let me find that one really quick. You're going down that top, is that top list of our top 25 articles?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, for the listeners, we just published our 1,000th article last week after 3 years, so I did a little summary of our top 25 over that time, so.
Okay.
Although it didn't really surprise me if I remember that one.
Right, and it was written on, published on September 16th, 2012, the 50 corporations that rule the world. And you say there are 37 million known corporations in the world, including the hundreds of thousands of super wealthy individuals posing as commercial entities to avoid taxes. A study done last year of the top 43,000 revealed a super elite alliance of the richest of the rich. And so, investigating 147 of the wealthiest and most powerful multinational corporations exposes a shocking fact. They're all owned by the same people.
Right. No, that's right. I love it. Actually, like all of our material, pretty much, we don't have reporters out there breaking stories. I mean, this one was actually researched and published by a group called NewScientist.com.
Okay.
And we actually found it from a friend of ours called the Just Thinking Blog. So, I mean, it's been out there a couple of times, so we just jumped on it because I was fascinated by this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And there's no one, I mean, I'm, you know, poor working class guy, but I've dabbled in the stock market a couple of times. And I pay attention, and I've been watching, you know, CNBC and Bloomberg for the last 20 years because just I seem like that's where you get the raw uncensored news is the stock market. I don't watch any of the networks. But anyway, so it seems to me, yeah, I have noticed that. It's all these same hedge funds and mutual funds and Goldman Sachs owns a piece of everything. And so does General Electric. And it just seems like it is. It's these same billionaires, and like they say, diversify. And they are. And they're all sitting on each other's boards. That's another thing that the researchers and the authors of the story, you know, they discovered. If you look at all these board members and these boards of all these top, you know, 50 corporations, they're all members of the other corporation.
Oh, absolutely. They all share board members.
And they get paid handsomely for this, too. It's like, some, you know, they get hundreds of thousands of dollars to meet, you know, four times a year for an hour at a country club.
It's, sure.
You know,
okay.
If you look at them, too, it's dominated by financial institutions. According to the list, Barclays is number one. Capital Group Companies is number two. You know, FMR, I'm not really sure what FMR Corporation is, but you got other ones like State Street's number five, J.P. Morgan Chase is number six, you know, UBS is number nine, Merrill Lynch is number 10, Deutsche Bank is number 12, Credit Suisse is 14, Bank of New York Mellon is 16, Goldman Sachs is 18, T. Rowe Price is 19, Morgan Stanley is 21, Mitsubishi is 22, Bank of America is 25. I mean, so, I mean, that's just a who's who of, you know, who we learned over the last 5 years dominates the world economy.
Right. And I'll bet that our Congress people sitting in Congress probably put their money into all of these big corporations. That's where they're investing.
Oh, you know it.
Sure.
We know they play the stock market every day. We know that.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, let's see what else you have here. You have a lot of very interesting articles. And as you've indicated, you're not necessarily writing all of these articles.
Well, we pretty much never, ever just copy and paste another article. It's like in this case, they put together the list, they gave out the order, they gave out the actual institution name. So we just, I republished the list, but I didn't,
sure.
I didn't republish their other eight pages of articles or whatever. And to be honest with you, you know, Whiteout Press readers seem to appreciate my, you know, 25 years of, you know, unbridled experience, and I'm not really gullible. I tend to see things through the vines, you know, and I report it as I see it.
Sure.
Typically, you know, it seems to be a little closer to the truth than any other reporting source. So, all of our articles at Whiteout Press are all original. But like I said, we do occasionally reprint, you know, somebody else's list that they publish some kind
sure.
of.
Sure. Now, you have numbers. Excuse me. if you go to the homepage or any page, you have numbers right under the article. Like for the Supreme Court rules, drug companies exempt from lawsuits, you have a figure, 283,471. What does that figure represent?
Oh, those are the page views for that particular article.
Okay. All right.
Article.
Okay.
Yeah, I probably would have put that in there, but it would have taken up so much room, so I just put it in front.
All righty. This is a very interesting article. It says that the subject is, or the title is, Courts Quietly Confirm MMR Vaccine Causes Autism. This was published on July 27th, 2013. And this was in Austin, presumably Austin, Texas. And so tell us what you discovered, and give us a little rundown on this.
Yeah, this is our second most popular article of all time, and this is definitely our number one most controversial article of all time. In fact, I did something that I almost rarely never do. After it was published a couple of days later, I added a section at the end that let one of our really, really upset, angry readers supply a couple of paragraphs just to argue the opposite side of the point. And I figured since this really, like I said earlier, you know, things that affect people's families and their children and stuff, they get really passionate about, and I understand completely, and I always try to be, you know, respectful, and, you know, I'm a parent myself, so I'm just, I don't want to, you know what I mean? I don't want to
sure.
politics into somebody's, you know, tragedy. So when I started getting all kinds of emails, both like I wrote, you know, they were both born again. I probably got a couple hundred emails and letters from people, you know, just heartbreaking thanks for, you know, covering the subject and exposing it the way none of the other corporate media outlets will, because they depend too much on Big Pharma's advertising dollars and, you know, things like that. And then I'd get a couple of other, you know, people who either claim to be, you know, researchers or journalists or just parents that had, you know, children that were suffering from autism. And they were just, you could almost sense the tears in through the letters that, you know, how dare you republish, you know, this quack's research, and, you know, he's been condemned by the medical community, and how, you know, how can you give people this false, you know, information? And I'm thinking, oh my God, all I did was republish a court case. It was a court ruling. It was a settlement out of court. That's all I did. I reported on it. That's all. And
right.
that's what launched it all back in July 2013. There was a court case where parents were suing the pharmaceutical manufacturers, and forgive me if I don't know the exact big pharma company and the exact vaccine it was, or you know, those kind of details, but they were suing one of the pharma companies, and rather than fight it, the pharma company sued in court and paid damages. So I didn't, you know, I reported that as, you know, that's a settlement. They got paid. Those victims got paid by the company. You know, that speaks for itself just to a certain extent. So
now, did they actually, was it before a jury, or did the drug company settle before it went to jury?
I don't believe it was, if it was a judge or a jury, and I even want to say it was in England. I want to say it wasn't in the United States. I want to
Wakefield, I think, probably. Well, who knows?
He's the one whose research everybody seems to be using, the ones that are linking the autism with the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, which I can get into in a second, because once I got really into this thing, I can understand both sides again. Because as it turned out, and actually it didn't make it to the judge or the jury, but they settled out of court they settled without admitting wrongdoing, and the victims had to sign the agreement saying that they wouldn't ever talk about it ever.
And that's so they can remain unscathed before the majority of the population.
Right. That's so they can try to sue me for saying that they admitted wrongdoing when they didn't, you know.
Yeah.
But as it turned out, if you really look at the research, I mean, this guy, Dr. Wakefield, he did his survey and his study and research on this particular MMR and the autism. It did get picked apart because he did do some improper, you know, oversight, but it wasn't to the point where they fudged things or changed things. It was almost like they didn't cross the T's and dot the I's, which in the scientific community, that voids your survey. You got to do it right or you don't do it at all. But it didn't change the fact. And here's one of the things that sticks out in my mind that Wakefield and his supporters always say, is that during his research, they looked at all of these autism cases and they noticed that between the kids that had the vaccines, the ones that got the drug cocktail, the three vaccines in one shot, the measles, the MMR vaccine, all the autism kids had gotten the MMR vaccine. They didn't have any autism cases where the kids got the measles shot separately from the mumps shot, separately from the rubella shot. And his theory is that it's the cocktail that's causing the autism. It's not necessarily the measles vaccine. It's not the mumps vaccine. It's something about that drug cocktail that's doing it. And he pointed out, as soon as they published that research, what did the government in the United Kingdom and Britain do? They officially outlawed the individual vaccine and mandated that all healthcare workers have to give the MMR drug cocktail. And that's part of what made this such a controversial topic. It's like, sure, there's no smoking gun, I suppose, but then why does the government and big pharma keep every chance they get, they're being just dishonest, you know, or just not playing right. But that was what they found, or so they said, that, you know, all the autism cases were from the drug cocktail MMR, that the parents who got their kids vaccinated with the individual measles vaccine and the individual, you know, mumps vaccine and rubella vaccine, they didn't have any problems.
Right. Well, there's a name down here in the article, Hannah Poling. Now, her parents... Her father was a neurologist. I believe he was associated with the Mayo Clinic. I might be wrong, but I believe that he is associated with the Mayo Clinic. And I do believe that they settled out of court. But he knew, he absolutely knew that the autism that his daughter suffered was from the vaccines, and because of his occupation, he knew specifically what it was caused from. And I believe that his wife was also, she may have been a nurse and a lawyer, so they had a lot of education and a lot of experience so that they could be successful. They would have been successful have they gone to court. I believe they did go to court. I have to look this up. But there are so many people who have been successful in proving what Wakefield has proven, and he certainly isn't the only one that has addressed this issue. I mean, there are a lot of people for a very long time who have been talking about the vaccines and the autism, and even people in, say, for instance, Patricia Jordan, who is a veterinarian. And she has written a book about vaccines. And if you look in the animal kingdom, you find that animals are now getting what we would consider human diseases, cancer and diabetes and all kinds of things. And I think it's probably a result of the vaccines. So it is an issue that is very controversial, only if you have not studied it to any great extent. And of course, parents who have gone along with their doctor and have given their children based on their doctor's recommendation or not, they're going to react because people don't like to be duped. And especially when it concerns their children.
Right. And, you know, it's like, I'm glad you pointed that one part out about the MMR and causing the brain damage. That's another one of those technicalities that just seems dishonest to me. Because I've had people tell me, and it's even in some of these articles, and like I mentioned, after our article came out, because this article actually had over 200, it had a 250,000 Facebook likes, this one article alone.
Wow.
And that's just Facebook likes. That's not even page views. So that's how widespread this article got out there. And then within a couple of weeks, Forbes published a scathing rebuke of everything this article said. They even called it something called Whiteout Press published an article. But I was flattered Forbes came out and took me on, so whatever.
How fun.
Right. But it's like you were saying that these victims, they're saying that you can't prove the MMR causes autism. All you can prove is that the MMR causes brain damage, and then you can prove that the brain damage mutates into autism. But you can't skip that middle step. And to me, that doesn't make it, you know what I mean? That doesn't make
sure.
It, it's still causing it. One way or another, it's getting there. But
sure.
They say because it's not a direct link, that the whole thing goes out the window. You can't say any of it. And that's like what all of these people have been trying. Like you said, they've been pointing this out for years.
Right. Now, you do have a Facebook page.
Yes, we do. It's Whiteout Press. Actually, I'm there as a person, but they made me actually change it to my name as well. They caught me posing as an organization. But we also have a Whiteout Press a page where people can post their own stuff.
I have never personally, well, I did sign up for a Facebook account some years ago, 3 years ago or so, and then I thought, gosh, this seems like a good way for the government to track personal opinions and relationships, and I just, being a little on the paranoid side, I thought, I think this is probably a CIA operation.
Well, isn't that what Russia's Putin just said? I think he just announced the same thing a week ago, that the whole Internet's a CIA operation.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is.
But you know what? I look at it like the NSA and the FBI, they're always listening and they're always watching. In fact, that's probably good advice to all of my readers and your listeners for when you get really frustrated and angry and you start saying things you might regret. They're always listening and they're always watching. So just be careful. You know, don't be too crazy or anything.
Oh, I've never been cautious.
Well, I tend to say things I don't typically always mean. I can be colorful. I'm a journalist. If there's one thing I know how to do, it's, you know, it's get colorful. So,
sure.
But I don't need some rigid robot federal government trying to put me away like they did to, you know, Barrett Brown. Poor Barrett Brown, who's, you know, nothing but a journalist who republished the story about Jeremy Hammond breaking into the Stratford defense contractor and discovering all this evil stuff that they're doing to spy on us. And poor Barrett Brown, who writes for Vanity Fair and Rolling Stone and you know, The Guardian and all these major publications, he writes an article about a story about the event, and he includes the same thing that the New York Times and all the other publications did. They included a link to the web address to where all this stuff landed in the public domain. And out of all the newspapers on earth that did that, they arrest Barrett Brown and put him in jail and threatened to put him in there for life, just for publishing a link to a public website.
You're kidding.
No. And the poor guys, they finally, after it took, I think, 2 years, 3 years of threats and negotiations, they finally dropped that portion of the charge. But, I mean, the poor guy's still going to go to jail for probably 3 years, 4 years, just for all the other, you know, trumped-up stuff they threw at him.
For just publishing a link?
Well, that was half of it. I mean, but then the other half of it was, and this comes into my warning, you know, to all of our listeners and readers, is that when the FBI came to arrest him for that, they broke down the door at his mother's home. And they, according to Brown, they terrorized her, threatened her, intimidated her. They demanded that she turn over everything of his, from his computer files to his, you know, everything. And I'm thinking, what kind of a older mom, she doesn't know nothing about what he's doing, you know?
It's exactly.
Like, you know, and I guess they found his laptop in just there. So they arrested her with hiding his laptop computer, even though it's her son, right? So they went after her, and she actually got convicted, believe it or not. It, you know, all of this, everything from hiding evidence and standing in the way of a criminal investigation, she didn't do any of that, you know, so old Bear Brown.
Wow. Did they kill her dog? Did they shoot her dog?
No, but I wouldn't be surprised. They do that occasionally, so I hear, you know.
Yeah.
So that was the other half of poor Bear Brown's charge, is that, and this is the other part that rubs me wrong, he made a short little YouTube video just documenting, you know, casually what the FBI did to his mom. In, you know, in the process of her charging her and convicting her. And he swore at the end of it, he said, agent such and such a name, because I guess it was really one agent that did it all. He was really the one. He says, I'm going to do to you everything you did to my mother. And, of course, it's all going to be legal because it was legal when you did it to her. So it's going to be legal for me to do it to you. And I just want you to know that. And they arrested him for threatening an FBI agent. And,
oh, my gosh.
But that's the one you can't get out of. And that's what he's going to plead. He's going to get convicted of, and he's going to spend some years in jail for that.
So. Wow.
But, how do you go to jail for threatening to do something illegal when you purposely, specifically say, I'm going to do something that is totally legal. I'm not going to break the law, you know? It's,
right.
You know, it's, but that's why I would say, be careful what you say, even especially if you're upset or frustrated or all passionate, because they will use it against you.
Wow. Did you read in, I don't know whether it was in the newspaper where I read this, I'm sure it was, about the 95-year-old man in a nursing home who the police went out and what the nursing home wanted to do was to take him to a hospital to have some sort of a procedure done on him, and he said, no, I'm not going to go to the hospital. And so the people at the nursing home called the police to force this man to go to the hospital. And the 95-year-old man was very upset. And anyway, they ended up shooting him with some rubber bullets, and he died.
Yeah, I believe it was one of those beanbag guns, those crowd
beanbag
guns.
Yeah. I mean... Oh.
I remember that. That was right here in the Chicago suburbs or something.
Yes.
Right. No, that was, I think the old man had some kind of little pocket knife or a butter knife or a steak knife in his hand, as if they couldn't have gotten that away from him somehow, you know, or talked him down somehow.
Sure.
I know, they had to shoot him.
And it was like 18 times they shot him.
It was crazy.
I mean, this is a 95-year-old man, for goodness sake, who just said, no, I don't want whatever it was they were trying to do.
Right, I know. That was heartbreaking. But something happened, if I remember right. Either the officer got fired, or I think they tried to sue, or I'm not sure what happened. But they're going after him for that one. I know that.
Yeah, there's been officers who've beaten up women. Because I do watch the local news once in a while, and there was one case where three officers beat up a woman prisoner. They stripped her. I mean, it was terrible, and they had a video of this.
I know it goes on a lot more than people think. It's crazy.
Yeah.
In fact, it's just to kind of give you a sense of what I've been doing for the last couple of years too. When I started White Owl Press 3 years ago, I really wanted to cover local stuff if I could. Chicago and its political corruption and its national figures, whether it's Obama or Hillary Clinton or Emmanuel, it's a juicy story every day. I was, you know, it's fun to write about it. But so you know, I didn't want to do it on Whiteout Press because nobody really lives in Chicago. My audience on Whiteout Press is more national. Plus, I get people from England and Australia and Canada. So I ended up launching a separate news outlet called Illinois Herald. So I have actually three news outlets. I have a third called Opposition News, too. But that's where I specifically cover independents and third-party candidates like the Libertarians and the Greens, and that's strictly politics. So that, because it was, you know, those topics seemed to tended to take over Whiteout Press, and the readers seemed to like more of a variety, which I like too. So
okay.
I started the two separate outlets to break them apart and not cloud up Whiteout Press so much. But speaking of the government corruption and police brutality and things like that, over at our Illinois Herald site, which is actually just www.illinoisherald.com, and like I said, I'm a one-man show. It's me. I do it all. There's an entire section on that site that I put together that's called Corruption. And you'll find it in the main heading. In fact, I'll go there really quick to make sure. And I was keeping track of literally all the corruption stories every day in the city of Chicago. Because I kept telling people, is it just me or is there a new one every single day?
Yeah.
You know? And yet they act like it's all new. Like it's never happened. This has been going on my entire 43 years of living here. You know? So I started writing them down.
Yeah.
And now that I'm only, what, four months into the year so far, and it's overwhelming. It's mind-boggling. And actually, that turned out to be the most popular section of the entire Illinois Herald site. Even though we do local articles, just like, you know, we do at Whiteout Press, daily, you know, every day it's a different article. But yeah, we've got the corruption section, and it literally just goes for miles. And it'll bring a tear to your eye, too, actually, some of this stuff.
Well, did you cover the issue with Rahm Emanuel and right before he became the governor, or the mayor, I'm sorry, that there was a residency issue?
Oh, sure, sure.
Did you know the gentleman by the name of Jeff Joe Black?
No, I can't say it. No, I can't say it rings a bell.
Okay. He was... He was a guy that was fighting. He brought the residency issue to the forefront, and he was working with some of the media people in Chicago. And I mean, he was really very persistent. He did manage to get some media coverage on it, and there was a court case where Rahm Emanuel had rented his home out to a family in Chicago that when he went to Washington.
Right. And then he wanted to move back to run for mayor, and they refused to leave. I remember that. Like, that was so funny at the time to me. But the
rest of the story is that he said that that he never gave up residency, that he left, and there was a court case. And one day in court, the family said he did not leave any of his personal possessions in the home. The next day in court, they said, oh, would you believe we found 100 boxes of his stuff down in the basement that we just never noticed before.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
And Jeff Joe Black was taking a lot of heat, apparently. Then he lost his job, and he became homeless. He ultimately became homeless, and he thought, well, I think I'm going to leave town. His mother lives in Pennsylvania, so he moved to Pennsylvania. I don't have the dates. I think it was in, I'd have to go back in my computer, maybe 2011, because I interviewed him a couple times on my radio program in RBN. Anyway, he went back to Pennsylvania, and within 3 months of living in Pennsylvania, he allegedly jumped off a bridge. And I think that somebody followed him and threw him off the bridge. And he'd given up the campaign against Rahm Emanuel, but whether this was a for retribution, whether they murdered him out of retribution or revenge or whatever, or for some reason, he was murdered.
Yeah, Well, you said it, not me. But no, I'm right there with you. In fact, I would not be surprised. You know, it wasn't even that long, about a month ago, 2 months ago, just to show you how, you know, I'm teaching myself some of this stuff as I go. I produced my very first YouTube video all by myself a couple of months ago. So I now have the technical internet skills of a 15-year-old, I think. So, I figured, what would I do? If there's something I want to experiment with, what have I been meaning to do? I put together a video called American Martyrs and Political Prisoners. And I started just kind of looking into it, checking out some of the names people were writing about, you know, different like LinkedIn groups and, you know, Facebook pages and stuff. There's a lot of people out there saying the same thing. I mean, people like Andrew Breitbart, he's one good example. You know, the guy dropped dead of a heart attack in the middle of the day on a sunny California street. You know, he was just kind of walking around. Nothing exciting happened. You know, and then you got people saying, well, didn't you know the CIA has a heart attack gun? And I'm thinking, well, all right, that's kind of a stretch, though. You know,
But they really probably do.
Oh, I know. I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, I've seen everything from the insect. You know that they have insect-sized drones?
Sure.
Yeah, I did an article, and it's like 2 years ago we did an article on that one. It's like some of this technology is actually a decade old already, and it makes you wonder, what are they doing now that we're not going to find out about for another 10 years?
Sure.
They do.
Or never.
They got little insects like the size of a bee, like a little bumblebee. And it's nothing more than a mechanical metal drone with a, you know, a video camera and an audio microphone on it.
Sure. Keep your windows closed.
Right.
Or swap that bumblebee that comes into your house when the door is open or something.
But yeah, there's been a lot of mysterious stuff. I mean, I was just going to kind of glance at the list really quick, but, you know, Andrew Breitbart, like I said, he's one of the ones that jumps to my mind.
Sure.
He was really popular with the conservatives.
Absolutely. You have one, I'll call it a more light-minded kind of an article, 18 memorable Hillary Clinton quotes.
Right. And actually, that came from two separate. Like I said, I get a lot of emails, people saying, hey, why don't you write about this? Or, you know, in the case of Hillary Clinton, they're already campaigning for her. You know what I mean?
I know.
I get it all the time. Kind of like Rand Paul. We may as well just skip it all, and it's going to be Hillary Clinton versus Rand Paul, I guess. So they tell me anyway.
Sure.
I'd like to kind of wait for the election. But yeah, so I got one from the left and one from the right. And one of them was just all these amazing, you know, listed quotes from Hillary Clinton that were just beautiful. And then the other one was just some of the most foul-mouthed, dirty language and saying, is this who you really want to be your next president? And I thought, okay, I can do this. Because if I published only one of the lists, like I said, like always, they're going to call me a
left. Sure, I'd be biased.
Right, so I may as well put both lists into one article and I'll make both sides mad at me. So.
Okay. Well, of course, we could probably do this for a lot of people. You know, who was it that said, we'll read the bill after we pass it. It was a health care bill. We won't know what's in the bill. We'll pass it, and then we'll read it.
Right. No, and Nancy Pelosi's got one of those famous quotes that's something just like that. I remember that one.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of.
You'll find out what's just in it after blank.
Right. And then, of course, everybody's aware of the murder list, the Clinton's murder list. I had a copy of that a long time ago. I think there were only 50 people on the list then. I think it's probably up to 100 by now. But anyway, go over some of these quotes.
Well, you know, like I said, the first half, and I should mention that we don't just pick on Hillary. About 2 years ago, or back during the 2012 election when Newt Gingrich was running for president, we published an article, I think it was, memorable and scary Newt Gingrich quotes, because some of them were brilliant, some of them were just downright scary. So,
and he's another guy that went from a college professor, a minor college professor, into politics and became a millionaire.
Yeah, and, I mean, he's got his own way about him. I'll give him that much. He's definitely a personality, and you know, and he's got that. And it's to be honest with you, he's kind of. I can see why some of the older, and I know his base is just really kind of older folks and things like that, but he doesn't hide it. He says right away, I don't support this, but I'm going to support it because my base supports it. And I thought, wow, you know, okay, I'll take that over some guy pretending like he had an epiphany and all of a sudden he really means it. You know what I mean? I don't want a dishonest elected official. I'd rather have one just say, I pulled my constituents, and the majority wants me to do this, so I'm going to do it, you know?
Sure.
You know, I know that's how Gingrich, when he flip-flopped on marijuana. You know, a thing about Gingrich, the man was 25 years ahead of the time. He was preaching about decriminalizing marijuana 30 years ago, and then now that the rest of the country catches up with him, he switches and doesn't want to decriminalize it. And then when I asked him why, that's what he said. He said, well, my base is senior citizens. They're afraid. And he said, so I'm going to represent them. And so as much as I've never really agreed with Newt all that much, I hate to tip my hat to it with that part of it. So.
Huh. All righty.
But Hillary does. She's got some really, you know, things you can kind of appreciate, too. Like the first one on the list here, it says, the difference between a politician and a statesman is that a politician thinks about the next election while the statesman thinks about the next generation. You know, which I like that.
But, sure.
You know, because I like a good, sincere elected official rather than a fun.
These are her public kinds of comments.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine. So, and like I said, I didn't get them specifically from her, but there's a thousand different sites out there that track everything Hillary's
sure.
up to. And, you know, a lot of these are on a lot of them. So I just kind of, like I said, one of them collected them from one of the left-wing sites that's promoting her for president, and then one of the other sites that's trying to sabotage her already collected the other one. You know, I mean, it's like, I'm just going to randomly grab one here, but it says, you know, always aim high, work hard, and care deeply about what you believe in, and when you stumble, keep the faith, and when you're knocked down, get right back up and never listen to anyone who says you can't or shouldn't go on. You know, oh, and here's a good, this one I actually like, because like I said, I'm a parent, too, you know, and, you know, Hillary says, parenthood has the power to redefine every aspect of life, marriage, work, relationships with family and friends. Those helpless bundles of power and promise that come into our world show us our true self, who we are not, and who we wish we could be. You know, I thought, yeah, that describes parenthood. You know, I can get that.
Sure.
But then you look to the bottom of the list.
Okay, before we go to the bottom.
Okay, go ahead.
We can't say most of those words.
That's what I was going to say. I can't read any of those from the bottom. They're so full of, you know, profanities. Kind of crazy.
I mean, it's very profane. And
it's
you have
like every other word. It's crazy. It's,
yeah. This is the real Hillary.
I can imagine. I don't doubt it. I actually don't doubt it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Now, David Icke has written some interesting things about her.
Yeah, I don't know. I even know if I've seen much of that. Because I'm trying to not get involved with Hillary. I feel like I've been saturated with Hillary for 25 years now.
Yeah.
One of my passionate things out of the Timeless section is the title of it is How China Conquered America. And it's actually a day-by-day, blow-by-blow of how Bill Clinton was elected president using all kinds of illegal money from China. And then the first thing he did upon taking office was he named the DNC chairman, Ron Brown, to the Secretary of Commerce. And then the next thing he did was transfer all of our top-secret missile technology from the Defense Department to the Commerce Department, which the Pentagon objected to, but Clinton had to overrule them, and then they sold it to China. And then all of a sudden, Ron Brown dies in a mysterious plane crash, and China becomes the first country on Earth to successfully use weapons in outer space. So, I mean, it's like a nice little 30-year transgression, but I love that article because it's all factual day by day by day, and it's from 30 years ago. And I feel like, and like you said, with the Hillary death list or the Clinton death list, I remember those too. I tried to avoid those too. They were, you know, how am I going to know if they're true or not? I don't, you know, I almost believe it, but I don't want to get into that.
Well, if those people are dead, and yeah, you can't make an out and out statement that yes, they did this.
Exactly. But
it sure did benefit him.
And when so many of them just happen to be Arkansas State Troopers on the bodyguard detail.
Yeah,
that raises a lot of red flags right there.
Yeah. Okay, let's go into something a little bit. Lady Gaga, Satanism and the Illuminati.
Yeah, that one I was tempted not to, but like, you know, like you said, like I said, I try to not be so serious all the time, and, you know, just I try to touch on some of the things. I love to read and write about Nostradamus and prophecies and I mean, UFOs and aliens and ghosts and, I mean, you name it. I love to get into all of that stuff, but there's just not all that much calling by the readers for some of that stuff. But, you know, I don't know, the Lady Gaga one seemed to fit, and then once I actually looked into it a little bit, I was blown away. It's this this girl does nothing but represent Illuminati symbology, history, everything. And it's crazy.
And of course, she's a role model for a lot of people.
Oh, I know it. And like, there's this one guy, I quote his website because he really did some research, and he picks apart all of her music videos, and he points out that every single one of her music videos pretty much depicts young women being turned into robots and like sexual slaves, and they have no. In fact, a lot of times she'll reenact like lobotomies, like where the woman's being lobotomized by some older man that turns into her slave, and that's literally the content of every one of her videos. It's almost like, oh my God, she really is trying to turn these kids into just puppets, you know, a little non-thinking, do what you're told, do what we tell you.
And of course, all the teenagers are constantly have a cell phone and they're texting somebody. I mean, it's like they're connected. I mean, you hear stories of them walking out into traffic and getting hit.
Oh, I know.
Because they're just so much a part of what they're doing. They just have no concept of what's going on around them. Well, you have a lot of photos associated with the Lady Gaga article.
Right.
I never paid much attention to her, but I think she's pretty wicked.
Yeah, and I know I never really liked her music either. You know, I mean, I like all kinds of music, but I just never really cared for her music, and I don't really know much about her. But then once I started looking into this, and I kept looking. There was so much
sure.
to find. There was so much to find.
Sure. Now, are you familiar with Dave McGowan?
Oh, I don't know.
Now, he is an author. He just published a book. It's called, what is it, Scenes? Let me just look it up real quick. I just interviewed him. I've interviewed him several times, but I just interviewed him about a week and a half ago. And he talks about the Laurel Canyon and how a lot of the people, the music people associated with Laurel Canyon from about the 60s, were really part of the intelligence community, and that one of their objectives was to literally to destroy the truth movement during the Vietnam War.
Yeah, no, I've heard bits and pieces of that myself.
There's
a lot of stories about famous people. I don't know if it was like Frank Sinatra and Joe DiMaggio or something, that people like that would be working for the CIA because they could get in and out of all these, you know, enemy countries just easily.
Ah, sure.
You know, they were celebrities. They were dining with kings and queens and dictators and, you know, brutal tyrants. And, you know, the CIA would have killed to get inside that room or to meet this guy. And here it was. All they had to do was ask Joe DiMaggio to go. He'll do it, you know.
Sure. Well, who's that basketball player, the tall, skinny one, had an earring?
That narrows it down, Deanna.
See, I don't follow basketball or
football. No, I don't either.
But the one that has the earring, and he went as an envoy to somewhere.
Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, we published an article about that, too. I think it took me 5 minutes to come to the conclusion it's nothing but a CIA ploy.
Exactly. I mean, here he goes waltzing into a country that, I mean, that's really weird. Okay, Dave McGowan just published Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon. And it's available, it just came out, literally, just came out. It's available now in Kindle. And as paperback, and let me just tell you when it came out, April 30th. And so anyway, he talks a lot about the Laurel Canyon and about the intelligence community using all of these people, like the birds, the monkeys, the Beach Boys, the mamas and the papas, the turtles, the eagles, the flying burrito brothers, Frank Zappa, all of these people. Well, they have some interesting connections. And a lot of them died. Some of them very tragically.
I'm not even familiar with that one. I mean, it's one of those things I've heard of, but I've never had the opportunity or the chance to get into it.
Sure. Yeah. So when I think about Lady Gaga, I mean, you think of the people that I just mentioned. I was never much into music. I'm more into classical stuff. I was kind of a geek, and never really. To me, all of this music is noise, and I just don't get into it. But when I compare those people that I just mentioned and that he talks about with Lady Gaga, you look at the huge transition of the people that are now the role models, and you think, oh my gosh, it's gone from moderately evil to satanical and very obvious, overt, in your face evil.
Yeah, they don't even hide it. It's just, like you said, it's blatant in your face. I mean, yeah. She dresses like the devil. She's recreating statues of Baphomet the devil and all these paintings of the devil. And
yeah.
Her staff and promoters and producers are all wearing devil t-shirts with literal pictures of Satan and things, you know?
Yeah.
And then she's always making that Illuminati, you know, the all-seeing eye. It's on everything.
Yeah.
It's like she's obsessed with putting that on every image she's got.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then, you know, some people, if you talk to people about it, a lot of them just, you know, they shrug their shoulders and say, oh, it's just an act. It's just something for publicity. That's what the kids are into. And, you know, and then.
But how did they get into this? Did they say, oh, we want somebody that will be a role model that promotes Satanism? That's what we want. No, they don't know what they want.
Yeah, I know. It's
put in their face, and then they say, oh, yeah, I like that.
No, I know. That's like the last thing you should be promoting for kids. It's unbelievable. Because a lot of these kids are just, half of them don't know what they're doing and what they're, you know, recreating and what they're acting out and, you know, doing impressions of what they see. They don't even understand it. But I guarantee you there's a certain large, portion or percentage of them that are going to rebel to the, you know, to the extreme now. And it's going to be down some satanic path because suddenly they think it's cool.
Exactly. All right, you did an article. It was published October 7th, 2012. Homeland Security graduates first corps of homeland youth. What's that all about?
Yeah, that is actually one of my favorite articles because we broke that story nationwide. White House Press doesn't break stories. I'm a one-man show. It takes me a day or two. I'm perpetually 2 weeks behind on my stories. But that actually turned out to be our third most popular article of all time. And I am proud to say that nobody, we stumbled across it. One day I was researching some article. I want to say I was, you know, I write a lot about the veterans. I try to help out the vets a lot because, you know, they're suffering. You know, 3 years ago, 16 a day were killing themselves.
Now it's up to 23.
Yeah, two years ago it was 18. Last year it was 20. This year it's 22. I mean, it won't stop going up. So, I mean, it's heartbreaking. That, and like I said, our POW, Bo Bergdahl, so between all of that stuff, the PTSD, you know, the wives, I try to write a lot about it, and somehow I ended up at the defense, you know, I was at the .gov website trying to research something and looking to get some backup, and I looked at this press release that was probably a week old at the time, and I read it, and once I started reading the article, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was a graduating class of kids. Like, you're talking 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds. No, 18, 19-year-olds. Yeah, in fact, there it is. It's a corps, mind you. And it's called, believe it or not, the Homeland Youth Corps, or the FEMA Youth Corps. It goes by two different names depending on how it's, you know, where you look. But it's FEMA, and they are recruiting 18 to 24-year-old kids to work for FEMA as just government, a youth corps. And I swear to God, when I saw it, the first image that popped into my mind was the Hitler Youth. I don't know why, and I'm not alone. Once I published the article, I mean, I got 19,000 Facebook likes and 250,000 page views, and I probably got a good 500 emails from people that were horrified by this. And, I mean, a lot of them said, oh, my God, it's Obama's, these are going to be little teenagers terrorizing the people just like the Hitler's Youth did in the 30s, you know?
Well, we probably have a different view. Of Hitler, If you've been to my website, I'm a revisionist historian.
Oh, are you?
So we probably have different views. I mean, the victorious armies always write the history of everything.
Yeah, I'm an open-minded person, especially about that period of history, and I was just going to quote that exact same thing. That's one of the reasons why, because I do know history is written by the winners.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. This isn't the first group of youth. I know that back in the 30s, during the Roosevelt administration, that they had a lot of various groups of people. The CWA, what were some of the other ones that they had? Putting people to work kind of a effort, where they would, these kids would be working for the government and earning money because there was no employment. And so is it this kind of a situation? What are these kids supposed to be doing? What is their objective?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that because I look deeply into this. I read every single word that the Department, that FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security has published about this program. And I feel like I understand it now as well as the people running it. But no, it's not like what you were talking about, which might sound normal because during the economic crash, 2008, 2009, lots of people looking for work. Plus Clinton, I remember Clinton had a similar program with his volunteer corps, which turned out to be kids we paid, which I thought, why are we calling them volunteers if we're paying them? But anyway,
sure.
But no, it wasn't for the jobs, to give kids something to do, to get, experience and things like that. This program is specifically for future youth. These kids are going to be stationed all over America like a spider web, like a grid. And, I mean, every little town's going to have its own little chapter. It's going to be like a post office. There's going to be one in every town. And they are just going to be there to serve federal authorities in any way, shape, or form needed. And some of the examples they gave and some of the training that these kids had to go through was, I mean, granted, probably half of it was natural disaster. How do you unload semi-trucks full of 50-pound bags of grain really fast? How do you drag sandbags and make a wall really fast? How do you set up a triage unit if you got 150 people that are suddenly hurt? And things like, really actually kind of desperately needed stuff to help first responders and things like that. That was half of it. The other half of it was pretty much crowd control and PR. And it conjured up images of mass, refugee camps of Americans that don't want to be there voluntarily. And then you got an equal number of really angry family members and loved ones. And these are the kids that are going to settle down the angry family members and loved ones while the real, forces deal with whatever, the prisoners.
Right.
So it was a half PR force to give the government, federal government's line during disasters or states of emergencies. And then the other half of their job is literally pitching in with whatever 19 and 20-year-olds can do as far as, sandbagging and boxes of food. So, it was all for future natural disasters and mass things with mass population things.
But you have all this age group, 18 to 24, that's comparable to the U.S. military.
Right. And that's what they limit it to. I mean, that's the programs, they limit it to that age group.
And then when you consider, I have a Sunday program, and my first guest yesterday was the daughter of a Vietnam War veteran who had high exposure to Agent Orange. Now, they sprayed millions of gallons of Agent Orange in South Vietnam, all over the military that was there. I mean, 58,000 military people died there, but then the rest of them came home, and a lot of them were homeless, and a lot of them died very, very early, and a lot of them had children who had horrible birth defects, one of which was the lady that I had on yesterday. And her name is Heather Bowser. She was born with only one of her legs was missing from the knee down. She didn't have some of her fingers. She's had horrible birth defects. And before she was born, her mother suffered two miscarriages. Her father died at the age of 50 from serious complications. And I can relate also, my older brother died of lung cancer, and he did three tours of duty as a medic in Vietnam. And so you hear about all of these stories about the military. And then you can kind of compare this to the military in Iraq and Afghanistan and all of the birth defects that they have among the native population there. And then the Veterans Administration has told these people coming home, they advise them not to have any children because they would probably suffer from birth defects because of the depleted uranium. And, of course, then you factor in all of the vaccines that they pump them full of, that they compel them to have. And so you wonder, what the heck's going on? Because when you're talking about this group what are they calling them? Homeland youth kids.
Right.
And you think, well, gosh, they call them something different. Are they calling them something different because military, by law, is not supposed to be used against the population? So they have another group of people that they can use against the population? I mean, these are questions that I think are interesting to ask.
And, you know, for me, I would just look back at history. That's kind of where I always go, and I'm not totally sure, you know, just to see what history has to say. But, you know, I think it's kids are easily impressioned. They're very passionate. They're easily controlled.
Sure.
Know? Just like, you know, Nazi Germany and Soviet communism. They, you know, there's a lot of the young kids that were the, you know, backbone of the movement. So, you know, yeah, it kind of scares me that, you know, maybe that could be used for the same thing here in America. But, you know, at the rate they're graduating them, I mean, what was that first class? It was graduating them at 231 kids each class. And they're doing classes nonstop. And this article is from October 2012. So,
sure.
You know, that will give you a sense of how many there are out there now. So, Ancient Orange, you were talking about Ancient Orange. If I'm not mistaken, isn't that the same company that gives us genetically modified foods now?
Sure. Yeah. Which brings up the fact that they are having... it's probably worldwide. It is on May 24th, and it's all over, and it is the March Against Monsanto.
So glad you mentioned that. My 19-year-old daughter gave me three bits of advice, and all three were, don't forget to mention the March Against Monsanto. Over and over, I kept telling her, tell me when it is. You know I'm down for it. I'll report on that, because, you know, here's the other good thing about me, Deanna, and Whiteout Press. Unlike most news outlets that report on it afterwards, we report on things beforehand so that our readers can participate. They can go there. They can spread the word. They can, you know,
sure.
Cover. So,
okay. You know. The website is march-against-monsanto.com. So you need to write about this and get it out all over because they were one of the producers of Agent Orange.
Right.
And, of course, they are in charge of a lot of things, GMO foods, it is something that we should all participate in because we all eat food.
See, and that's one of my examples I use because occasionally, I always try not to, I don't want to make the news, I want to report the news. And I try to be unbiased and impartial, but, you know, to say that GMOs are dangerous, not fully tested, and are bad, I don't think that's my opinion. I think that's a fact. So I report it that way. I'm sorry. You know, it's like saying you got to report that child abuse is may or may not be bad. Well, no, you don't. Child abuse is bad. You know, GMO products are bad. I'm going to report it that way. So, and I do. I cover GMOs and Monsanto since day one. And, yeah, I can't wait to cover this event. This will be fun.
Yeah, and it's definitely something that we all need to participate in. Do you remember, probably it's been 5 or 6 years, about the anti-war demonstration in downtown Chicago?
Well, I don't know. how long ago?
I want to say 5 years, maybe 6 years ago.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't know then.
There were at least 5,000 people down there.
Really?
And there were SWAT teams lined up on both sides of the street, and I participated in that, and we had people from the suburbs came in buses. My particular group met at a church, and they bused us in to the city. We didn't march on the main streets, but we marched, I mean, it was, a mile or two, and it was a fairly cold day. We were all bundled up. We had placards and everything, and they had SWAT teams on both sides of the street. They also had buses that with the bars on it, so that if any of us became unruly or anything, that they could shoot us with whatever they would shoot us with, and then it could cart us off to the bus and take us to who knows where. And maybe the reason that you don't know anything about this is because they never reported it in the newspaper. That night and the next day, they reported on the pro-war movement that was downtown. They interviewed the seven people that were pro-war and totally ignored, and this is an example of biased reporting, totally ignored, did not show pictures of the crowds of people that were anti-war.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. That's, what did they say? 60% of the American people no longer trust the corporate news media on TVs anymore? They just don't. They know better.
Sure.
On our About Us section on White Out Press, the first day I sat down and just wrote out, really, why am I watching White Out Press? And one of those little brief parts of it says, did you ever experience a newsworthy event in your own neighborhood or your own little town that you actually witnessed or were a little bit of a part of, and then when you saw it on the news that night, you didn't recognize it at all because they reported something completely opposite of what happened? Because so many people I meet, they've had that experience. They know firsthand how blatant it is. And those are only the little things, I mean, that's not even, doesn't even cover things like Monsanto and the Monsanto Protection Act. That gets slipped into a law on a sticky note. Nobody knows what senator did it, and this is not news?
Sure.
It's Monsanto from all the side effects throughout history or ever into the future, but yet nobody knows how this sticky note got into this bill, and nobody cares to report it or even look into it,
Right. And they do slip those things into the bills, and nobody reports it.
Oh, sure, and we found out who it was. I mean, I'm not going to name his name because he didn't confess, but he's been, and I believe he's retired, or he's retiring now.
Oh, then you can tell us who it is.
Actually, I'd have to Google it really fast because I don't want to name the wrong one.
Okay. Well, I think probably anybody you name would be guilty of something, so it wouldn't be a big deal
I named him in an article. That's the other beauty, like I said about White House Press, I don't make the things up. I report things. So
sure.
Somebody reported it, or somebody said it, or somebody acknowledged it, or there was a leak or something. Associated Press came out with something, or a government agency confirmed something. So I know I named his name. It's in the article. I'm just going to look it up really fast.
Okay. But
that was kind of a crazy thing to do, to stick a law that protects Monsanto for eternity.
But this is not to say that we cannot believe anything, because there are some people that say you cannot believe a single thing in a regular newspaper, which it would be incorrect.
I hear you, and I'm guilty of, one of my favorite sayings is I tell people, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see.
Sure.
That's how upside down the world is right now. Even the stuff you see with your own eyes isn't even true sometimes.
Sure.
But you're right. You can't throw it all out. You can't throw the baby out.
Right. And sometimes, as a reporter, and you've probably experienced this, when something occurs, you have a bunch of reporters that they want to get the story, so they're out there, they're writing down notes, they're interviewing anybody and everybody that they can. they are going to make mistakes. It's just part of how it goes. I've been interviewed by a few reporters on other issues, other things, activities that I've been engaged in. And, you think that they're taking down accurate notes and everything, and then you read the article they've written about you, and I think, oh, gosh, that is so in error. Not a big error, just not accurate, not precise.
Right.
And so I got to the point that I asked that I be allowed to read the article before they published it because of this kind of, and I'm a stickler for detail and for accuracy. So anyway, but that happens when people report something. It might be just one little thing that they're not reporting right, but that, as you say, that does not mean that the entire article is wrong or what they're reporting about didn't happen. It's just that people make mistakes.
Right, and a lot of times it's not even the reporter. I know for a fact that sometimes there's editors in the background that are tweaking these reporters' stories without even their knowledge or consent. You know,
sure.
To make it a little more politically correct or to not embarrass somebody or
sure.
Certain whatever their agenda is.
And you'll also find that the smaller independently owned newspapers usually get it right. They don't have the editors that are tweaking or saying, no, you can't write about this. It's the big newspapers, the big corporate newspapers that are the most problematic. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, definitely. Sure. And, it's like you always, it almost shouldn't even be surprising because, I mean, after all, they're all for-profit corporations. That's all they are. And if you ever listen to the speeches their CEOs give, you know, they always say the same thing.
Sure.
We don't have any loyalty to our readers or viewers or even the truth. Our one and only motivation is to maximize profits for shareholders.
Sure.
You know, that's all they care about, you know, in the big picture. And, you know, who would want to get your news from someone like that, you know?
Well, even the New York Times, I mean, they do, you cannot publish all lies, otherwise you'd lose total credibility with everybody. So, I believe that you need to be choosy, read whatever it is you read, and then use your critical thinking skills to figure out, okay, what's
right. And a lot of them are going to fall by the wayside. I mean, those print publications are going out of business left and right. They're going to have to adapt to the independent media model.
Sure.
To be more honest, just to survive.
Sure.
They're going to have to compete with people like you and me. You know?
Now, getting back to the vaccine issue. You're familiar with Bill Gates and what his depopulation program is because he is a eugenicist. His parents were eugenicists, and he made the statement that they wanted to reduce the world's population and they would best do that through vaccines. What are your views on that?
Well, I mean, that's one of those things. I've heard a lot. I've read a lot, and I've seen a lot of things, and to be honest with you, I can only research things so far down to find, and then you run into a brick wall, and I find myself scratching my head and just, all I can do is go with my own gut instinct and common sense because, you know, at the end of every one of these arguments, all any of us are doing is taking the word of somebody else. You know what I mean? Whether it's an expert, an institution, a government
sure.
agency. I mean, I always tell everybody, I don't know any more than you do, okay? But I do have a lot of experience in common sense, you know. And,
sure.
And so when it comes to Bill Gates, I have read so much, and actually, thankfully, for, you know, he's one of those people that does things way out in the open. I mean, that man publicizes all of his crazy, you know, global modifications, geoengineering, you know.
I mean, he did say that.
And yeah, he knows it out in the open. He's got, there are actually, if you watch the stock market channels, every now and then they'll talk about some new little startup company that does nothing but service Bill Gates' crazy dream, whether it's pumping our skies full of, you know, microscopic little bits of aluminum to try to reflect the sunlight back up into the air to stop global warming, which, you know, according to my daughters and a lot of other people, it's poisoning our waterways, poisoning our farmlands, poisoning
sure.
crops, and it's causing all kinds of, you know, bad things to the environment. But that's just one of those crazy articles, you know, one of those crazy programs that it's not a conspiracy theory anymore. They published like UN papers suggesting, here's what we think, and we're going to do it. We're going to at least try it out and see what happens.
And of course, you're talking about chemtrails. Have you ever done an article on chemtrails?
Yeah, I mean, I have, but not at White Owl Press. I've done them, like I said, I've been doing this since I was 17 years old, and like I argue with the kids these days, you know, I say chemtrails have been on, you know, one of our topics for 25 years. And 25 years ago, we all thought that the government was secretly vaccinating us with, you know, this antidote to whatever they were going to destroy the world with in the next World War III. You know, and that's what those chemtrails are. Nothing but a vaporized mist of a vaccine that's, you know, vaccinating us without our knowledge. Or maybe experiments. They're going to load us up with an experimental disease and then see how long it takes to kill us. Who knows? But
sure.
Now today, all the chemtrails have changed. It's no longer about, you know, medical and pharma experiments and weird medical things. Today, it's all about global warming and geoengineering. And from the documentation and the actual companies that are doing it, it's shifted dramatically. But, you know, the kids these days, if you're in your 20s or your teens and you're, you know, fighting chemtrails, you don't really realize why they're called chemtrails. It's the chemicals that they were making vaccines out of and, you know, injecting us with vapor mists instead of syringes. You know, but today, yeah, and God knows what it really is. And, you
sure.
know, like I'll sometimes say, who's to say one plane isn't pumping out one thing and another plane's pumping out something completely different for a completely different reason? I don't know.
Sure.
But we do know they're doing something.
Right. And you are, as we mentioned before, you are my neighbor, not next door, but certainly in the next, I live in the suburbs of Chicago. You live in Chicago.
Right.
The weather in Illinois has been kind of different this year.
Yeah, very different, I would say. What did we have? It was the third coldest winter on record, and we had the longest string of below freezing days or something consecutively. It was a one for the record book, that's for sure.
And more snow than how many inches of snow? 273 inches of snow.
Yeah, it was a mind-boggling amount. But I believe it because I was shoveling it. It seemed nonstop all winter long. It was
right. And we had snow in April. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, we had, it was a dusting, but here it was, snowing again.
Right. See, but then, I seem to remember throughout my life, it always seems to snow once in a while in April, and occasionally, like in October, it'll snow once in a while. And then I look back to last winter, the winter before, I don't think we hardly got any snow at all the previous winter.
Right.
It's been weird. It's been swinging to extremes almost.
Right. And did you cover the flood down in southern Illinois? It's been 5 years ago, 6 years ago, where they just completely flooded entire towns and wiped out all this farmland, which I compare to what they tried to do with Bundy. Bundy, did I say the wrong word? Bundy. No, I guess not.
Oh, okay.
Because I thought of another bunny. I thought, oh, no. But they're wiping out a lot of farmland that it would be unnecessary to wipe out. I mean, they're flooding miles and miles of farmland, particularly in southern Illinois, that we don't really hear about. And you think, well, why are they doing that?
Right. Yeah, no, but I mean, I looked into it because of our Illinois Herald outlet. The Illinois Herald's funny. It was, you know, I hate to get ahead of myself or anything, but the Illinois Herald's oldest newspaper in the state of Illinois. It's from 1814, before Illinois was even a state. And the only reason I mention it is because it was founded way down in southern Illinois in Kaskaskia, Illinois, which for, you know, historical, you know, buff, Kaskaskia used to be the capital of Illinois.
Sure.
It was even part of Quebec at one time. It was part of Virginia at one time. It's had the most, you know, it's almost like a Forrest Gump existence. It's always been at the, in all of the crazy historical things.
Sure.
The reason I mention it now is because it used to be, I mean, a thriving center. You know what the population was as of 4 years ago? 14. That's how many people are left, as, you know, legally recognized as living in the entire area right there.
Oh, my goodness.
It's pretty much gone. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I really don't get it other than I know the seas are rising here and there, it seems like. But, you know, is it earth changes? Is it man-made? Are we diverting rivers again? It's a shame, but it's, you know, a lot of stuff happening.
So what are you going to cover next?
Actually, today's article is going to get me in a lot of trouble. It's a list of 50 down and dirty tricks that establishment incumbent election candidates use against citizen candidates. The title will be a lot shorter than that, but that's really what it is. It's a 50 bullet point list of all the dirty tricks that incumbents use against their, you know, sincere, legitimate, right, you know, candidate opponent. Which is why all the candidates are, you know, all the incumbents are running on a poll. You know, everybody's afraid to run against them. We know that they're just going to get their credibility destroyed, and, you know, in the media. And,
sure.
You know, like they're going to be slandered. And, you know, I always point out that one of my favorite statistics is, did you know that and I don't know if it holds up this year or last year, but for the longest time, the United States congressman had a higher reelection rate every year than the Politburo did in the height of the Soviet Union when it was against the law to run against them. That's how, I mean, we've even got a higher reelection rate of our incumbents than they did in the Soviet Union when it was against the law to run against them. You know,
That's
how broken our system is. It's just crazy. And not only that, like in Illinois, did you know if you want to run for Congress as a Republican or a Democrat in Illinois, you only need a few hundred signatures? But if you want to run for Congress as an independent, a libertarian, a green, or anybody other than a Republican or Democrat, you need something like 20,000 signatures just to get on the ballot. It's a couple hundred versus 20,000. That's how they keep the reformers off. That's why the incumbents keep getting reelected with no opponent. The whole system is just, it's rigged. You know, and even the ones that do get on the ballot, you know, and they do start polling good numbers, as soon as they have a televised debate, guess what? Only the Republican and the Democrat ever get invited to participate on the televised debate for the voter. You know, and it's like, and then they say, well, we've got criteria. You've got to be polling at least 5% in this poll. And then you look at that poll and you say, well, gee, you left my name off the poll. Of course I'm not polling 5%. I'm not. You left me off. So, I mean, it's just every step of the way is, I don't know how else to say it other than it's rigged, you know?
Indeed. And, of course, you can get a lot of television time if you're a millionaire.
Oh, sure.
Like Bruce Rauner.
Somehow in our society, being a millionaire, billionaire makes you a credible, legitimate candidate. Yeah. I don't know how that got to that point, but, you know.
Right. Wow. Well, it's certainly been interesting chatting with you.
No, it's been fun. I've appreciated it. I definitely appreciate it. And just actually to remind your viewers and my readers, you know, I know we touched on a lot of subjects and a lot of articles, but our homepage at whiteoutpress.com, it's got a handy little search box at the top of it. Just type in any, you know, word, term, name, subject you want, hit the search button, and it'll list out every White Owl Press in our, you know, we've ever done over 3 years on that subject. So.
Okay. And also, be sure and subscribe. You can do that at whiteoutpress.com on the right-hand side. And just subscribe. And anyway, it's been very interesting. I appreciate you being on today. And hopefully people will subscribe.
Thank you. And it's always free. Like I said, it's always free. It always will be. And we don't share your email addresses or your information with anybody for any reason.
Sure. One of the statistics, you have a statistic of the week. And this is from Too Much Online. And it says, the world's richest 85 people have more wealth than the world's poorest 3.5 billion people.
Yep.
Well,
I mean, you know, I'm not exactly a socialist or nothing like that. I just, you know, I'm more of a capitalist, you know, half socialist. I'm, you know, I kind of see the good in all the aspects of it, but that statistic kind of took me by surprise, you know?
Sure. Yes, there certainly is some things going on. Well, thank you again for joining me today, and hopefully we can talk again.
No, thank you, Deanna. I appreciate it.
All righty. Take care.
Thank you, too.
And take care, listeners, and we will talk to you next week. Have a wonderful day.